All right, so today we're diving into a case that really highlights the kind of messy realities of contract law. And I think it's something that a lot of our listeners, you know, think about, right? What actually happens when a deal goes bad? Can you just like yank back money, hold payments? Like, how does that actually work?
It's a great question. And this case is perfect for looking at how courts actually like scrutinize those clauses. You know, the ones that say what happens when someone breaks the contract.
Mm.
And in this case, we've got kind of a classic big company versus little guy scenario.
Oh, yeah. Total David and Goliath vibe.
Right. So you have Melaleuca, this big multi-level marketing company, and they're going up against two of their own independent contractors, the Fowlers. And what's at the heart of this whole thing is this one little clause that they call the Policy 20. And it basically says the Fowlers can't just jump ship to a competitor and take Melaleuca's customers with them.
Yeah, so for those who aren't familiar with Melaleuca, they basically sell all these health and wellness products through, well, it's a network of independent distributors, right? Multi-level marketing, that whole thing. And so the Fowlers were part of this network, but their agreement basically said, hey, you can't go work with our rivals and try to poach our customers. And if they did, Melaleuca thought they could not only like stop future payments, but they could actually try to claw back commissions they'd already paid out even after the supposed breach.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful. One side in a contract having that kind of reach is definitely something that raises eyebrows. And that's where this gets legally interesting. There are two big questions that we're going to try to unpack today. First, can Melaleuca really just demand those commissions back without actually proving that the Fowlers' actions cost them money, you know, a specific amount?
Yeah, like can they just retroactively punish them financially without actually proving they were hurt? That seems like a pretty big deal.
Right. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is this policy 20 with this whole clawback thing, is that even legal? Or does it go too far? Does it become like an illegal penalty? These are questions that go way beyond this one case and have implications for contract law in general.
All right, so let's get into the weeds a little bit. The Fowlers signed this Independent Marketing Executive Agreement, or the IMEA. And inside, there's Policy 20, this whole non-recruitment thing. Can you break that down for us? Like, what exactly couldn't they do, and what were the consequences if they did it?
Okay, so basically, Policy 20 was all about preventing the Fowlers from taking Melaleuca's customers and basically, you know, convincing them to go to a competitor. It's like a non-compete kind of thing, which is pretty standard when someone has access to a company's customer list. But this Policy 20, it had some teeth. If the Fowlers broke it, Melaleuca could not only stop paying them commissions, but they could actually demand back any commissions they had already paid after the violation, even if the work had been done.
So it was really designed to make sure they wouldn't even think about working with competitors, but also to, like, you know, take back any money they might have made doing it.
Exactly. And the competitor in this whole mess was Max International.
Right, right. So when did the Fowlers start working with them? Was it like completely separate from their work with Melaleuca?
Well, that's where things get a little tricky. In 2008, the Fowlers were still working with Melaleuca, you know, still getting those commission checks. But they also started working with Max International at the same time. And to make matters worse, they started going after Melaleuca's own customers and trying to get them to switch over to Max International. So for Melaleuca, this was like a double whammy, a complete betrayal. They saw it as a clear violation of Policy 20 in the IMEA.
Oh, wow. So they were essentially working both sides. And the timing here is super important because Melaleuca didn't actually know about this double dealing right away, did they?
Nope, not at all. The Fowlers were allegedly doing all this throughout 2008 while still getting those commission checks from Melaleuca. Melaleuca only found out about it after they officially ended their relationship with the Fowlers in November 2008. And it wasn't until April 2009, a few months later, that they finally filed a lawsuit to try and get those commissions back that they had paid during the time they say the Fowlers were breaching the contract.
Wow, so they really waited for that shoe to drop. Okay, so back to Policy 20. It's like a double-edged sword, right? It stops future payments and then it goes after past payments too. Let's focus on that second part, the clawback. What exactly did it say Melaleuca could do to get their money back?
Policy 20 was pretty explicit. It said if an independent marketing executive, you know, like the Fowlers, violated that non-recruitment rule, Melaleuca could withhold future commissions, but they could also demand all the commissions they had already paid after the violation returned. They essentially wanted to retroactively undo any financial benefit the Fowlers got while, in their view, doing damage to their business.
Yeah, it was like saying, you shouldn't have even had this money in the first place. And of course, this is where the real fight begins, right? Melaleuca is saying, they broke the rules, we don't owe them, and we want what we paid back. But the Fullers, they had a different story.
Exactly. The Fullers argued that this automatic clawback of commissions, without Melaleuca having to prove any actual damage, was basically a penalty. Like they're saying, you can't just demand $43,000 back without showing us exactly how we hurt you by that amount. It makes you think about all those contracts we sign, you know, gym memberships, service agreements, and those crazy penalties they sometimes have.
Are those penalties even fair? Are they legal? It's a good question.
Right. So this case went to court, and at first, the court actually sided with Melaleuca.
Really?
Yep. The initial ruling was in their favor. It was summary judgment, which basically means the court agreed that Policy 20 was a valid reason to withhold the commissions and that the clawback was just a normal part of the contract, not a penalty.
So Melaleuca won round one.
They did. But the Fullers weren't going down without a fight. They appealed the decision all the way up to the Idaho Supreme Court.
And that's where things took a turn, right? What did the Idaho Supreme Court decide?
The Idaho Supreme Court said, hold on, not so fast. They vacated the lower court's ruling, meaning they basically threw it out. They sent the case back down to be looked at again. The Supreme Court said there were two big legal questions that needed more attention.
And these two questions are really at the heart of the whole dispute.
Absolutely. The first one was, could Melaleuca actually get back those commissions without having to show any actual damage they suffered because of what the Fullers did? The second question, which is tied to the first, was whether this whole Policy 20 with that clawback provision was actually legal under contract law, or was it an illegal penalty?
So the Supreme Court was basically saying, you can't just take this money back without showing us you were actually hurt.
Right. They were bringing things back to a really basic principle of contract law. Even if someone breaks a contract, the person who wants to get money back, in this case Melaleuca, has to prove they were actually hurt financially because of the breach. Just showing that a contract was broken isn't enough to automatically get money. It's like, imagine Melaleuca could show that they lost a specific amount of sales because the Fullers took their customers. That would be actual damage.
Right, but Melaleuca was saying those commissions they paid after the breach, that was their proof of damages, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was their argument. They were basically saying that because the Fullers were breaking the contract while getting paid, those payments themselves were the damage. They argued that Policy 20 meant they didn't have to pay those commissions once the contract was broken. So getting that money back was just fixing a mistake.
Okay, so it's like their argument hinged on the idea that they were already paying when they shouldn't have been.
Exactly. The Fullers countered that, saying this wasn't about actual damage, but more about punishing them for working with a competitor. They argued that the $43,000 Melaleuca wanted back wasn't actually linked to any real money Melaleuca lost because of their work with Max International. They said Policy 20 was just a way to punish them, not to fairly compensate Melaleuca. And this brings up a really important idea in contract law.
It's about making things right, not about punishing someone.
Yes. So there's this big distinction between what's called liquidated damages and penalties. It can be kind of confusing, but it's important.
Yeah, break that down for us.
All right, so liquidated damages. That's when both sides in a contract agree up front how much money will be paid if someone breaks the contract. These are usually okay, but there's a catch. The amount they agree on has to be a reasonable estimate of the damage that might happen because of the breach, and it has to be decided when the contract is signed, not after. It's about making the injured party whole, not punishing the other side. Penalties, on the other hand, those are just about punishing someone for breaking the contract, not about making up for a real loss. And penalties, they're usually not enforceable in court.
So in a nutshell, it has to be about compensation, not revenge.
Exactly. So the Idaho Supreme Court looked at Policy 20 and asked, was this $43,000 connected to any real losses that Melaleuca could prove they had at the time they made the contract? They said, no, not really. Melaleuca hadn't really shown how that specific amount was tied to the actual harm they suffered because of the Fullers going to Max International. So the court was worried that Policy 20 was acting like a penalty, not a legitimate way to cover losses.
So what about Melaleuca's argument that because the contract was broken, they didn't have to pay those past commissions in the first place? How did the court handle that?
Well, the court agreed that if a contract is broken badly enough, the other side doesn't have to fulfill their part of the deal. So in this case, maybe Melaleuca wouldn't have to pay future commissions. However, they made a really important point. Just because the Fullers might have broken the contract, that didn't automatically mean Melaleuca could just take back money they had already paid for work the Fullers had already done. To get that money back, Melaleuca still had to prove that they were actually harmed by the breach. They couldn't just say, well, the contract was broken, so give us back the money, without showing a real, specific loss.
It's kind of like you can't just undo the past entirely.
Exactly. This case has a lot of implications for contracts in general, especially these kinds of forfeiture clauses. What are the big takeaways here for anyone who deals with the contracts, you know, writing them, signing them?
What should people be thinking about?
I think the biggest takeaway is that if you're going to have a clause that takes money away from someone if they break the contract, you have to tie it to a real, provable loss. You can't just make up a number or use it as a threat. Courts are going to scrutinize these things very carefully. This is especially important for things like non-compete agreements, those kinds of restrictions.
So if you're the one writing a contract and you're thinking about including something like Policy 20, what should be on your mind?
You have to think about how you would actually prove you lost money if the other side broke that specific part of the agreement. What kind of real financial harm could you actually show? And is the amount you're asking for back a reasonable reflection of that harm? It needs to be about making yourself whole again, not about punishing the other side.
And for anyone who might end up in court over a broken contract, what should they learn from this?
Be ready to prove your damages. Don't just assume that because someone broke the contract, you automatically get money back. You have to show exactly how much you were harmed, especially if the contract has one of those forfeiture clauses. The burden of proof is on you, the person claiming damages, to really convince the court.
This also goes back to some really basic stuff we learn about contracts. You mentioned Hadley v. Baxendale before. How does this case relate to that?
Oh, totally. That case established the principle that damages for breaking a contract should be things that naturally happen because of the breach, or things that both sides should have reasonably thought about when they signed the contract. The Melaleuca case really reinforces this idea. It emphasizes that you have to be able to prove your damages. They can't just be hypothetical. This case is a cautionary tale, especially for companies that rely on things like non-compete clauses.
There is also this interesting side point where the Fullers argued that their work might have actually helped Melaleuca, at least at first. Huh. How does that complicate the whole damage question?
It's a great point. The Fullers were basically saying, look, we did the work, we earned the commissions, and that work probably still made money for Melaleuca, even though we later broke the non-recruitment part of the contract. This adds another layer of complexity because it suggests that just taking back those commissions might not be fair to the Fullers and might even give Melaleuca more than they actually lost.
It's like they were arguing, we deserve some credit for the good work we did before things went south.
Exactly. If Melaleuca really did benefit from the Fullers' work, then just taking back the money without considering that benefit might not be accurate.
So in the end, did the Idaho Supreme Court actually say Policy 20 was illegal?
They didn't make a final decision on that. They sent the case back to the lower court and basically said, figure out how much Melaleuca actually lost because of what the Fullers did. If, let's say, Melaleuca could only prove they lost, say, $10,000 because of lost customers, then trying to take back $43,000 would probably be seen as a penalty.
So as we wrap this up, what are the really big takeaways for our listeners?
First, if you're going to sue someone for breaking a contract, you have to prove how much money you actually lost. Just showing a broken contract isn't enough. Second, if your contract has clauses that take money away from someone for breaking it, those clauses have to be based on a reasonable and provable estimate of your potential losses. They can't be there just to punish the other side.
This case really makes you think about all those contracts we sign. You know, when you're looking at an agreement, how does it handle things if someone breaks it? Are the consequences actually tied to real damage? This case reminds us that it's super important to be clear and reasonable when you're writing contracts. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into a really complex but important area of contract law.